Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Laurie Beth Jones Blog Talk Radio Show. And on this lovely day, I am thrilled to be able to share some of the insights and wisdom of my dear friend, David W. Miller, Ph.D., and he is the founding director of the Faith at Work Initiative at Princeton University. He is our intellectual and warm-hearted, good friend, and he and I told him in the pre-show that I'm staying at a Marriott hotel looking out over the freeway in Nashville, and he said he has stayed in the same hotel. In fact, David and I often cross paths. We're kind of on the same speaking circuit many times. And David is a bilingual in the sense that he brings academic and business worlds together. And before receiving his PhD in ethics, he spent 16 years in senior executive positions in international business and finance, including time in London and Germany. And David has an interesting story. He was very high up in the business world and left to go into academia. And he's written a book called God at Work, The History and Promise of the Faith at Work Movement. Welcome, David.
Well, it's a joy to be with you, Laurie Beth. Thank you for that warm and overly kind introduction.
I've often said that if I had to pick one person to represent Jesus to the world, it would be David W. Miller. So,
oh my gosh! Now I'm afraid you've been having a libation too early in the morning or something. Goodness gracious! But thank you. That's very sweet of you.
that is great. Well, I'm always jealous of the time that we have because David lectures all over the world, and he's written this profound book, and he's also working with some of the nation's brightest and best students. And talk about what you shared in the pre-show with me, David, if you don't mind.
Sure. Well, you know, as you mentioned, you and I have cared deeply about this area of this intersection of faith or spirituality and work, and have thought, and of course you've written many classic pieces on this over the years. But now and then I wonder, was it just my thing or your thing or people like us that we meet from time to time in the corporate world? Is it a generational thing? But in fact, as I have the privilege at Princeton University of teaching just some extraordinary students of all walks of life and all backgrounds from all over the world, of a variety of religious traditions, and I'm both stunned and delighted at how interested they are in this question. They want to live holistically. They want to bring their whole self to the table, to whether it's to the classroom, the playing field, or when they graduate to the workplace. So I teach a few courses, different course here, but one of which is called Business Ethics and Modern Religious Thought. And in that, I look at the role of different religious traditions, not just Christianity, but the other great traditions of the world, and say, how do they make people better and more ethical leaders who can find meaning and purpose in their work and think of the greater good and not just enriching one's own pocket. And the class is oversubscribed every year. There's a long waiting list. And I can assure you, it's not because I'm a great teacher that they're just really interested in this stuff.
In fact, I think there was an article recently in either the New York Times or USA Today about Harvard students more and more giving their life work to causes rather than just Wall Street. And this is certainly the intersection and the crossroads where you stand bravely holding up a sign.
and you know, actually, at my challenge to those Harvard MBA students or other ones would not so much be you should go into a different field other than Wall Street, and that's fine for those who do, and I certainly encourage that. But how about those who are going to Wall Street? How can you do that in a godly way? How can you do that and still hold to the standards of values that many people find through their faith? How can you do that on Wall Street or equally difficult places? So as you know, I'm certainly not advocating that everyone leave the for-profit world. If anything, how do you transform the for-profit world?
So this is, I love the subtitle of your book. The subtitles often, you know, give you the meat of the context. The history, we don't have time to talk about the history, but let's talk right now about the promise of the Faith at Work movement, and then let's move into the challenge of that.
Sure.
And then you have very practical steps to help both workers and CEOs in this endeavor.
Yeah, in the old days, so to speak, a generation back, the idea was that you kept your personal life personal and you didn't bring it with you to the office, that somehow was seen as just not politically wise or astute for one's career. But there's a whole body of research now which is showing that, and companies are embracing this, that if they treat their employees well and let them bring their whole self to work, that they'll be happier, more productive, higher morale, higher creativity, better loyalty, all sorts of marvelous attributes. And so this idea of living a compartmentalized life, people are realizing, is not a good idea. It's not healthy at the individual level or for the company. Well, in terms of bringing our whole self to work, it may be how we dress, it may be the things we're interested in, it may be daycare for one's children, all the things that are on our minds, but it's also our faith, our spirituality. So companies are realizing if they can create what I call a faith-friendly environment, not faith-based, but faith-friendly, that's open to and welcome and embraces the spiritual side of employees. And obviously, you have to conduct yourself in with appropriate norms and behaviors, but broadly speaking, that welcomes the spiritual side of employees. They don't have to be embarrassed about their faith identity or their religious tradition. That employees welcome that. And in some cases, not only do they welcome that, but they're starting to insist on it.
Interesting. I know that you have done a lot of work with John Tyson. He's a good friend of both of ours, and I know that Tyson Foods has something like 156,000 employees that speak, I don't know, how many languages, 16?
Yeah, walk into any average Tyson food plant, and you will probably find over a dozen languages being spoken.
So languages represent cultures, and cultures have religions, and so David isn't just talking theory here. He has helped implement it in some of the largest and most impressive companies in the world.
Tyson Foods, you're right. They have implemented that where they actually have as part of their core values that they strive to be. And they know they're not perfect, but they strive to be a faith-friendly company. And the employees, or as they call them, team members, thrive with that. They find it treats them with dignity and respect. And it's really been a marvelous experiment.
So what are the challenges that people face doing this, in implementing this?
Yeah, as with any good idea, any good tool, there's a chance to misuse it or abuse it or take it to an extreme where it starts to cause problems. And with this area of faith in the workplace or spirituality in the workplace, one of the risks would be if people are trying to impose a certain belief system to say, well, this is the right belief and this is the wrong belief. So pushing of one's belief system onto another is, of course, not appropriate and not right. The workplace is not a church or a synagogue, or a house of worship. The workplace is a place of work. So while someone is bringing their belief systems to work, they ultimately have to remember the purpose there is to honor their responsibilities and their assignments at work and do that well. So perhaps one of the biggest risks is people who are overzealous in proselytizing or talking about their faith in ways that are disruptive and just not appropriate. That's one challenge, and easily manageable as long as everyone understands the guidelines and rules of the road, so to speak. Another challenge might be that some faith traditions hold certain belief sets that may be offensive or disruptive to others, and you have to differentiate between beliefs and behaviors. So your religion may treat you that certain behaviors are wrong and that people behaving in certain ways or living certain lifestyles are sinful, and that may or may not be, but you can't act on those beliefs. You have to behave according to the laws of the country and not discriminate against your fellow employees or subordinates based on what they believe. So this differentiate between beliefs and behaviors, again, it's a manageable issue, but you have to make sure that things don't get confused. Those are perhaps two of the big things which come up. People are overzealous about wanting everybody to know what they believe, and the other is, let's say, a misuse of power or a misuse of behavior, and again, all that can be managed.
Right. Now, you've developed a kind of guidelines. Can you address those? And let me just interject here to our listeners that you can reach David. He's given his personal email, dwm@princeton.edu. dwm@princeton.edu. And the website is Faith and Work, all words, no ampersand, faithandwork.princeton.edu. And I was looking at some of the courses and lectures, and oh my goodness, I could just stay up there and go to class every day.
and I bet you would get an A+, Lori.
I don't know. I would sure be raising my hand. The crossroad of religion and politics, Christian thought and practice, Buddhist studies, and I know you recently held something on the Pope's encyclical on the ethics of money. And boy, I sent that out to everybody. I forwarded that. Oh, I wish I could have been there.
It's an exciting time. Next month, I'm in about 2 weeks going over to Beijing, China, to be part of a conversation with some Chinese business executives and some Chinese scholars and international scholars as well, to talk about the role of religion as a source of ethical underpinning in the business environment. And in particular, I've been asked to talk about the role of Christianity in that.
Wow.
It's an exciting time. The point is, it's an exciting time that places that 10 or 15 years ago it had been unimaginable that this conversation should be going on, that now that's happening.
So what, and this is kind of an offshoot of this, but what is the difference between morals and ethics?
one begins with an M and the other begins with an E. No. I'm being silly. What's kind of an arcane question, and different people will answer it different ways. I'm sorry, that's my Calypso cell phone in the background. There we go. Some will describe ethics as a system of beliefs, and morals are more specific to a community. So a particular place or people in a given time might have their own set of morals that may vary, whereas ethics are typically seen to be something that transcends space and time and cultures. That's one way to think about it, but others have different ways. But, you know, in our short time, I might just mention one last thing. If people as individuals or as companies, as institutions or organizations are trying to think about, well, if I want to make my company faith-friendly, if I would like to learn perhaps my own predisposition, some of the research I'm working on and is in initially my God at Work book and I'm developing further is to create a scale or an instrument that someone could take, not unlike a Myers-Briggs test or Success Finders or Laura, your own great paths model with the four different wind, spirit, water, and fire and so forth, that someone can look and say, well, what are my predispositions when I try to integrate my faith and work? What's it look like? And my research suggests that we all consciously or subconsciously have a predisposition of a different way, of one of four different ways to bring our faith to work. And as with many things in life, being self-aware helps us be more cognizant of that, and equally to have some respect and learn to appreciate how others might have a different way of doing it. And all four are valid, appropriate, legitimate ways of doing this. But it gives a construct or a model or a framework both for HR directors and CEOs who are trying to think about this at the macro level, as well as you and me, the employee, who are trying to think about it in our day-to-day life.
Well, David's book is God at Work, The History and Promise of the Faith at Work Movement, and he can be reached again at dwm@princeton.edu. David, we have had just great times. We try to meet for dinner. We've been at Santa Fe and San Diego, and I think we tried to connect in London, and we're kind of ministers and missionaries and messengers, and I just love the work and the intelligence and the kindness that you bring to this entire topic. So I want to really encourage our leaders to get to know this man and his work. He is a stellar mind on the earth today. So David, thank you so much for your time. Blessings, and I hope to see you soon.
Well, likewise, and thank you for your overly generous words. I treasure our friendship and look forward to seeing each other somewhere soon. And warmest regards, Lori Beth, and continue
to very good, David.
Fruit of all your doing.
Blessing to your wife as well.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye now.
Thank you. again, listeners, David W. Miller, Faith at Work, and I mean just the topics, religion and politics, Buddhist studies and worship, Christian right and practice. This man is a thinker, and I've never heard the concept of differing behaviors and beliefs elucidated as well as he has. So, listeners, go out, make it a great week, and remember to bring your faith to work. Blessings. Bye-bye.